Food Lab began to bring together Detroiters who were already at, already doing what they knew how to do, and that survived.
Detroit's food scene is legend. It's a city of small local businesses, from upscale dining rooms to street barbecues to bakeries and urban farms. But with the outrage that erupted after the killing of George Floyd and the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, the deep inequities of the food systems and the organizations that feed the city were stressed to a breaking point. But, Davita Davidson says, that's when Detroiters rolled up their sleeves and got to work.
Whether that's frying turkeys out of a garage or commandeering church kitchens to do catering or making birthday cakes and macaroni and cheese in their own personal kitchen and selling it, Detroiters were surviving.
With her nonprofit Food Lab Detroit, Davita is helping food businesses not just survive, but thrive. I'm Ed Levine, founder of Serious Eats, and this is Special Sauce, the podcast about food and life.
I am the executive director of Food Lab Detroit. I'm a native Detroiter, but I also identify as a first-generation Detroiter.
I've admired Davita's work for years, and I wanted to know, in the Detroit food scene, in all its complexity, where does Food Lab Detroit fit in? Their mission statement reads, "Our mission from the very beginning and still to this day is to nurture and strengthen food entrepreneurs and small business owners who reflect Detroit's multicultural demographic in order to bring economic sovereignty and political power into BIPOC communities." Many organizations, from small outfits to large corporations, say that the principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion are part of their core mission. How does the Food Lab put that into practice?
Diversity and equity and inclusion, you hear it all over. But let me provide for you an acronym that's called JEDI. And JEDI is justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. And that is essentially the work that we have been doing at Food Lab Detroit, right? So diversity really means about making sure that you have diverse voices, whether that diversity looks like age or gender, ethnicity, and race, and socioeconomic status, geographical location, diverse, right? That's what diversity looks like. But inclusion, Ed, when we talk about an inclusive food economy, inclusion means making space for folks to feel welcome. Diversity can look like a check on a box and you can bring people in. But inclusion is about, how do you make people feel welcome? How do you bring those voices then to the table and make them feel like their voices matter? That I'm not just checking a box. You're not just here for me to have a certain quota, but I actually value who you are. I value your lived experience. I value your voice. That's inclusion. And my gosh, equity, right? Equity means, like, now that I have you here, now that we have you at the table, now we'll start talking about how can we begin to shift power. And power for us in Food Lab Detroit is really working with those individuals who typically don't have it or who typically didn't have it. So power looks like, how do we control our food system? Power looks like, how do we begin to start and own our own businesses so we have the power to hire who we want to hire? Normally, that looks like people in our community, young people, people with barriers to employment, right? And then justice. You know, you hear a lot about, you know, low-income communities or communities that's living under food apartheid and don't have access to fresh food. You hear a lot about, you know, giving these communities something. And for me, justice is simply, you can't give charity to repay to individuals what is owed to them in justice. And so for me, justice really looks like, how do we begin to share and distribute wealth back into these communities when so much of that had been previously taken and exploited out of those communities?
A lot of the things that you've been talking about in many places and for many people came to the fore after George Floyd. But in fact, you and Food Lab Detroit have been dealing with issues of food inequity for a decade before that. A lot of the DEI initiatives
we're all post George Floyd, but you were aware and wanted to do something about these inequities and about the difficulties that people of color have in starting businesses. You wanted to do that 10 years before the pandemic happened.
Food Lab Detroit started just as a meetup group. We weren't automatically and didn't automatically become a 501c3. And so shout out to Jess Daniels, who started Food Lab as a meetup group. And that happened around 2011, 2012. And aha, here's the key. Food Lab Detroit as a meetup, entrepreneurs, small business owners coming together to discuss challenges, trials and tribulations on how to start businesses. This happened at a time in which 2008, there was a crash, a mortgage crash, a financial crash on Wall Street. And then in 2013, the city of Detroit was about to prepare for the largest municipal bankruptcy that the world had ever seen from a large major city. Right in the middle of that, Food Lab started because we knew one thing, and that was the federal government, or our local municipalities, was going to save us. If we wanted to build our neighborhoods back, if we wanted to have strong businesses and healthy communities, we were going to have to do it ourselves. And so in 2011, Food Lab began to bring together Detroiters who were already at, already doing what they knew how to do, and that survived. Whether that's frying turkeys out of garage or commandeering church kitchens to do catering or making birthday cakes and macaroni and cheese in their own personal kitchen and selling it, Detroiters were surviving.
Yeah, they were building gardens. They were building gardens on abandoned lots.
Absolutely. And that happened decades even before then. And so we were taking advantage of the urban agricultural movement that began in Detroit in the 1950s as a result of Mayor Coleman Young, who started the Farm-A-Lot program. He, too, was from the South and understood he had a city of Southerners who had come up to Detroit from Alabama and Tennessee and Georgia and knew how to grow. And so he would figure out a way, how can the city help facilitate that? Help people start gardens so that people could supplement their grocery bills. So Detroit now has over 1,900 community farms and gardens where during harvest season, almost 40,000 Detroiters are engaged in growing and harvesting fresh fruits and vegetables. And so we were building off of a long legacy of Detroiters growing, cooking, harvesting, and preparing food. And the only thing we had to do was to figure out what is our place going to be along the food chain in order to continue the work the Detroiters were already doing.
You've created this community where entrepreneurship and activism converge. Often, they can be at odds, right? And so how do you bring together entrepreneurship and activism? How do you bring together the private sector and the public sector? How do you galvanize all of these forces that you've been able to galvanize? And I'm sure it's always two steps forward and one step back, because that's the nature of progress. But like, how do you bring together all these seemingly disparate constituencies and groups?
I love that question, because what you're really asking me is that how am I using entrepreneurship and business to bring about political or social change? Let's stop right there. And so here's the thing. If you think businesses aren't political now, they may not be using the word activism. But if you think business does not play a critical role in our public discourse as it relates to the policies that are created, you don't know anything about lobbying.
Yeah.
You don't understand how policy is written in the United States of America. What we decided to do is take that same framework, take that same blueprint, take those same structures and figure out a way, how can we make business work? Not for the big guys at for lobbyists, right? Or, and if you ask my opinion, right, chambers of commerce operate all over this country in the interest of business.
Right.
But they actually are an extension of the Republican Party, who are not ashamed or abashed that the fact that they write policies, right, favorably toward business. And so that's happening in our country all the time. So if you ask me, how did I bring those two together? Well, the blueprint was already written for us. We're just wondering, well, how can we make policies? How can we make change at the intersection of public policy, at the intersection of social change, at the intersection of small business ownership, actually work for our communities?
So tell us about some of the specific programs. I want to hear about the Fellowship for Change in Food and Labor. You're involved in providing business, legal, and technical assistance, but it's more than that. You're imparting a philosophy that brings activism and entrepreneurship together. But what you're really talking about, if I'm connecting the dots, is actually changing the relationship between each of the major players in the food chain. You know, whether it's labor or it's management or it's real estate developers.
That's right. And so Food Lab's programming can be defined by utilizing what we call the three C's. And those three C's are cultivate, connect, and catalyze. That's how we kind of bucket our programming. Cultivate is really about how are we cultivating businesses in a way in which we are teaching them how to operate a business in what we call a social and sustainable way. And that cultivate bucket, Ed, was really influenced and inspired by a kind of a business legal designation that's called the B Corp designation, in which these are larger corporations. Patagonia may come to mind. Ben and Jerry's might come to mind. Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream may come to mind. And they are all B Corp designated corporations. And their methodology is around how do we teach these larger businesses to operate at the intersection, and this is an accounting methodology, where you're not only paying attention to one bottom line, but you're actually paying attention to three bottom lines. And those bottom lines that we call the 3P are not only profit. Yes, we want you to be profitable. Absolutely. You need to pay attention to that bottom line. But also the other two are people and the planet. What are your metrics? How are you measuring the impact that you are making on the lives of people? How are you measuring the impact of how you are being sustainable toward the planet? So Cultivate, Ed, is really about teaching businesses how to create a business model at the intersection of people, planet, and profit, right? And we do that through, again, workshops, through business education classes, 6 weeks or 8 weeks, bringing in experts to help people legally, right? Financially, how to set up your accounting, how to set up your books, like all of that kind of business education stuff, right? That's Cultivate. The connect is how do we connect them to their peers? How do we connect them to subject matter experts? How do we then connect them maybe to the political leaders, people who are legislators? How do we connect them to the individuals who can influence how they run their business, right? This connection, how do we connect them to urban farmers and growers? It's great that we're telling you the importance of sustainability and how to operate in a way that is sustainable by locally sourcing your ingredients. That's great. We're teaching you about how to cost those goods using local ingredients. But man, the connection piece is now let us introduce you to the farmer that's actually growing those tomatoes. Right. Let me introduce you to the farmer that's actually growing those collard greens where you can source your ingredients from. So the connection piece is all about how are we connecting folks to each other. The fellowship really plays a big part of that. How are we connecting a cohort of like-minded individuals together for peer-to-peer mentoring? It's one thing for DaVita to say it. It's another thing for you to actually say it and hear it and be involved in your practices by working and talking and engaging with your peer group. So that's connection. And then the last piece is about catalyze, Ed, right? It's like once we've cultivated these businesses around a certain practice and they've gotten buy-in, we're connecting them to individuals. They're learning from their peers. How do we begin to then what's called catalyze change? Because one business can't do it. But if we're able to cultivate and connect them into a community, how might then we then galvanize them to really start catalyzing change by working together?
We'll be back with more of my conversation with DaVita Davidson in just a moment. But first, a quick reminder that if you want more of my conversations about food and life, you can find all our episodes at thespecialsaucepodcast.com. Food Lab Detroit faces one of its biggest hurdles, trying to turn various organizations in the food chain into responsible citizens. That's trying to bring about change in an industry where the margins were already razor thin even before the pandemic. The push for fair and equitable wages was already an urgent cause under heated debate in many industries, and COVID-19 exposed just how fragile small businesses and their workers really are.
A lot of this comes down to how do we do it in a way in which we still can be, again, that first P, profitable. And the biggest impediment to it all is once you even begin to get the owners buy-in, because this, for us, this has to be driven from the top down. You have to get, that's why we work with business owners. Now, there are a lot of fabulous groups out there. You've got unions now that are organizing, particularly, I'm thinking at the coffee shops all around this country, that's the where the employees are making the push, where the employees are pushing from the inside. But at Food Lab, we want to work with the owners and have this come from the top down. And so the biggest impediment for owners is like, how do I do this in a way in which I can then still be profitable? And my response is always, you don't have to do everything. We're not telling you to do everything. Pick your journey. Pick your journey. There's a buffet. Pick your meal. Do one thing at a time. If I'm being quite honest, Ed, the other impediment to change is because many of the owners feel like their customers wouldn't be on this journey with them, that there would be pushback from the customer. Why are you already adding the price of the meal with gratuity included in my bill? That's because this is the true value of what this meal costs. So don't worry about tipping. We've already got that. We pay our employees a fair and living wage, but we need to show our customers how much. So a lot of times it's pushback from customers. I don't understand. Why does this sandwich not have tomatoes on it? Because tomatoes aren't in season and we only locally source our ingredients seasonally, right? And so sometimes the impediment is on consumers. So now the job of all of us, and I don't want to just put this on owners, but I want to put this on people who write about food, people like you from Serious Eats, for us to have serious conversations so we can begin to educate consumers and begin to change the narrative about the true value and the true cost of what it costs in order for us in this industry to actually put food on a plate and actually serve folks in a restaurant.
And so one of the things that organizations like yours does is, and other organizations in Detroit, is bring fresh vegetables, bring farmers markets to underserved communities. And that's the way you affect change too, right?
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned that, Ed. Thank you so much for that. And when you start talking about people in marginalized communities who can't afford it, right? This is why it's so important for us to create language and for us to say the right word so that people can clearly understand what we're talking about. And this is why people in the city of Detroit push back on the word food desert. And I want to thank Karen Washington in the Bronx, who actually gifted us with this language around we don't use the word food deserts, we use the word food apartheid. Because what we need to understand is that food, when we start to talk about an affordability issue, has nothing to do with the fact that food, people don't have access to it or folks are hungry. What it has everything to do with is the systems and structures that were created that gives us the reason why food people can't afford food in the first place. And so I know that our communities are overrun by fast food restaurants and that people are shopping out of gas stations. But Ed, when you ride through my community, don't people ask themselves why? Why is there a McDonald's and then a Wendy's and then a dollar store located next to the dialysis center, which is then located next to some corporately owned pharmacy? Walgreens or Walmart or CVS. It's just kind of like, Ed, these things just don't happen. Yeah. It just didn't happen that you put the Kentucky Fried Chicken next to the dialysis center. And it's in your face. And so when we start to talk about folks who don't have access to good, healthy, affordable food, there's a couple of things that we can do. Number one, like you said, the city of Detroit and organizations like Keep Growing Detroit that helps Detroiters start their own farms and their own gardens, those fresh fruits and vegetables can help supplement your grocery bill. And a lot of people in Detroit grow because they don't have access to fresh, healthy food. And because Detroiters are so damn defiant, because Detroiters are so determined, they're like, oh, you know what? We'll grow our own food. And that's fabulous. But one of the things that we all need to get on board with is that how can we make sure people are actually making enough money so they too can access fresh, affordable food? That's where the fight comes in, to make sure that people are actually being paid a fair wage, so they don't have to make the decision between, can I pay my rent or can I actually go to the grocery store and buy good food for myself and my family?
For DeVita, when she looks back on her beginnings and the work of the Detroit Food Lab, what has this effort taught her about food in other cities? How does Food Lab expand its reach?
For us, growth and scale really looks like, how do we take our model, how do we take our curriculum, and partner up with community development corporations? So we have a sister organization in Chicago that's called Food Lab Chicago, and it's a partnership between Food Lab Detroit, Greater Chatham Initiative, and South Shore Chamber. And Food Lab Chicago was able, working with bankers, working with CDFIs in Chicago, to secure almost $3 million of funding for those small business owners in Chicago through EIDL alone. And so that kind of connection and mentorship and connecting them to the right people is what was needed. But my gosh, the financial industry actually loosened their purse strings a bit and actually provided access to capital for so many small business owners that helped their businesses to survive the global pandemic. We want to see more of that. So we talk about writing a check. Write the check to support these Black-owned businesses. It took a community of people around me so that I could do the work to be able to create a platform called Food Lab Detroit so that folks can plug in. It takes a community in terms of mentorships and mentees and subject matter experts to be around these entrepreneurs. One of the things that Black entrepreneurs say, that we are over-mentored and underfunded. Hello. We are over. So when you talk about write the check, absolutely write the check. Not only write a check to support organizations like a Food Lab Detroit, but my goodness, write the check to these food entrepreneurs and small business owners. Write the check in terms of providing them with loans and grants and funding.
What you're saying is, don't use the money to create what we had before. What you're saying is, use the money to create something better. Because if you use it to create the same old, you're going to have the same old problems regarding profit and labor and the relationship between various constituencies in the hospitality trade. And you're just going to have the same problems.
You know, where we are right now is that we're struggling in the industry to actually define collectively what better means. Because better means different things to different people, right? And so better for some folks could also be the industry is better because of our adaptation and our use now of technology. Oh my goodness, hasn't technology made our industry so much better? We can now, from the comforts of our own homes, just use an app and order whatever it is we want to order and have it delivered to our doorsteps in a matter of 15, 20, 30 minutes or less. Isn't that so much better than the way that it was before? Really? So we want to take one industry that exploits labor, and then now we want to create a whole nother industry. Yes, I'm talking about the DoorDashes and the Uber Eats and the Postmates industry. And we want to now create a whole nother industry that exploits labor. Is it really better?
DeVita and Food Lab Detroit are trying to do better. It's what she was born to do. And she sees herself as following in the footsteps of an important role model for herself and her family.
This is legacy work that I'm doing. I'm building off of work that had been doing even before me. But the reason why I was able to do this work and talk the talk or walk the walk is because it is my lived experience. I was the first person in my family born outside of the South. My mother and father both migrated, like over 7 million African Americans did as a part of what was called the Great Migration. And so mom and dad left the rural South, fleeing Jim Crow, fleeing state-sanctioned violence, and came north to make a better way for their unborn children, myself and my brother. My mother is from Selma, Alabama, hometown of John Lewis. Daddy is from Birmingham, Alabama. And so my mother and father got into good trouble. And so they passed the torch on to myself and told me that my charge in life was to get into good trouble as well. So getting in good trouble is in my DNA.
We thought we'd kick the tires a little bit more. I'm sorry. That was a terrible Detroit-centric pun. Kenji would love it. By talking to someone who went through DaVita's Fellowship for Change in Food and Labor program. Jihei Kim is the chef and managing partner of Miss Kim's, a restaurant in Ann Arbor, Michigan, that the restaurant's website says is inspired by Korean ancestors and Michigan ingredients. I love that. That's really cool.
I was born and raised in Korea, and then I immigrated to the United States and ended up in Michigan. So for me, it always comes down to finding a community because you're uprooted from your homeland and now you're looking to root in a different place. So when the pandemic hit, and I sort of knew of Food Lab, and when I saw that they were looking for a cohort for the fellowship, I immediately applied, hoping that they would consider Ann Arbor part of the Detroit area.
It's not that much of a stretch, really.
It's not. It's Metro Detroit, even though it feels like a world apart sometimes.
So you became a fellow. What was the experience like?
I mean, it was incredible because sometimes being a small business owner can feel like you're all alone, and especially if you want to do things differently than your industry average, and to meet people who had such genuine intentions to do better and to understand that that can also be really good for the business as well. We are, after all, not a nonprofit organization, but to make that connection and to take away all the learnings from the program that they set up and from bouncing ideas off each other and making connections with the like-minded people of like restaurant industry and farming industry and food industry in general was incredible.
You could be meeting about accounting or inventory control or whatever, right? Was it real nuts and bolts stuff?
Some of it was nuts and bolts, but what really like stayed with me was we did some more deep diving work, sort of envisioning better future for the industry. And that work, you know, when you are dealing with the day-to-day trials and tribulations, that's something that you don't think about. But to think about bigger picture outside of just your four walls in your restaurant and to connect with people and talk about, you know, we the industry is facing this huge upheaval in the pandemic shutdown at the time. And we're losing more than half of our workforce to unemployment because the indoor dining was shut down. Like, what are we going to do about that? And what are we going to do about that beyond that, regardless of the pandemic? So those conversations and the learnings, we did some learnings into Afrofuturism as an example and basis of imagining better future for ourselves. Those things really stayed with me.
Mm-hmm. Did it make a difference in how you conducted your day-to-day business?
Well, my restaurant is and has always been a sort of not a norm, more of an exception for the industry. We started as a one fair wage restaurant, not taking tip credit and paying more than tipped minimum wage, and front of the house and the back of the house has equity. What it did was more so that it reinforced the idea that we are doing the right thing and right by our staff and the industry. And also these things come with cost. Paying people more come with cost. Providing benefits come with cost. Having meetings to do open book financing come with cost. And what it did for me was to see examples of others also doing that and making the business viable, even in the middle of the pandemic, and then seeing what they're doing differently to make things work even better. So like sharing those ideas really was great.
What Food Lab Detroit is all about is this intersection of community and entrepreneurship. What specifically do you do at Miss Kim's that reflects your desire to connect entrepreneurship and community?
Like it comes from a place of hope and optimism. That sounds very vague, but that kind of colors every policy that we decided to do. So when we do open book financing, we have the hope and optimism that the staff will be financially proficient and will have desire to do better for the restaurant and for the community. And like, it doesn't have to be owner versus the workers, or it doesn't have to be like small business versus customers. Like, we're in this together, that sort of idea. I would say pandemic, especially in the beginning, was a lot of pivoting because it was unknown and things changed so fast. So it got us to have lots of conversation, open, difficult, hard conversations with the staff to make each and every pivot worthwhile for everybody in terms of finance, but also safety and wellness. I think doing things like that actually ensured that we survived the pandemic more intact. And I think the most tangible thing was that we didn't suffer from staff shortage to the degree that your average restaurants did suffer later on.
And what was DaVita like to work with?
Oh, DaVita is a firecracker.
She's a force of nature.
She's force of nature. She's a force to reckon with. And I love that about her, because when the conversation gets a little stagnant or a little safe, she's not afraid to like push you to go there and have like passionate conversations, but also providing like a safe environment for you to speak up.
And could you go to her with hard things?
Oh, yeah. I think we were talking about hiring. And for whatever reason, Miss Kim at my restaurant, we have good amount of diversity. And we talked about how to get other businesses to be more diverse and then to have like a deeper conversation. The safe way, safe route to talk about that is like, oh, do we have enough systems? Are we asking the same number of questions, same exact questions? Is everybody going through the same process? But she's not afraid to say like, what is your leadership look like? Is it diverse? Is it providing equity? Is it inclusive? And bring the race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, all of that right into the conversation, and then kind of break you off that discomfort about talking about difficult things. And then I am more comfortable being uncomfortable talking about the things that we face.
Are you optimistic? There are a lot of hurdles, right, that all of you are dealing with.
You know, on optimism and thinking the best of people, basis of how we like have conversations and set our policies. But for me personally, I want to make sure the restaurant survives. And then within that confined, I know what the right things to do. And I am going to have to go there and do that. And then I'm going to find a way to do that, regardless of how tough it is.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us. G is the chef and managing partner of Miss Kim in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And she actually went through the Fellowship for Change in Food and Labor with DaVita Davidson at Food Lab Detroit.
It has been my pleasure chatting with you. I look forward to having you at the restaurant. I wanna make sure you're stuffed and happy.
DaVita Davidson, Food Lab Detroit, and Jihae Kim are showing the way to a fairer, more equitable food system, not just in greater Metro Detroit, but everywhere for that matter. That way includes connecting food businesses, government, and the private sector to both the communities they serve and the workers that work in those businesses. This is no small or easy task, but it is essential work that needs to be done. I want to thank my guests, DaVita Davidson of Food Lab Detroit and Jihae Kim of Miss Kim in Ann Arbor, Michigan,
for taking the time to hang out with us on Special Sauce. This episode was produced by Pedro Rafael Rosado and Jocelyn Gonzalez of PRX Productions. If you want more Special Sauce in your life, just subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. Or go to thespecialsaucepodcast.com, where you'll find every episode we've ever done. I'm Ed Levine, and thanks for listening to Special Sauce. So long, Serious Eaters. See you next time.